Sumto Turu, we've now come to the concluding moments of our program. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, Spotlight Africa broadcasts are now archived on the KPFK website under kpfk.org. For any comments, please feel free to email us at spotlightafrica@kpfk.org. So until next time, peace and love. Stay strong, stay tuned to KPFK. Coming up next is The Car Show. And coming up at 4 p.m., African music from Africa and the African world on Afrodisia with Namdi.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles.
Curves of Angeles Crest Highway to the always sunny shores of PCH. This is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday on 90.7 KPFK FM Los Angeles for over 50 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn from AutoWeek.com. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite co-hosts in the world, Michelle Spencer, our Orange County Bureau Chief, a radio veteran, a practicing attorney, and an owner of not one, but two Mazdas, a Miata, and an RX-8. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here with you again to talk about cars.
And our other favorite co-host in the world. Let's see, where the heck did he go? A veteran automotive journalist who broadcasts in both English and Spanish, host of Garage Latino on Believe Network, current president of the Hispanic Motor Press, Ricardo Rodriguez Long. Welcome, Ricardo.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you again and Michelle, and we have so many things to share. Always something happening in this world on wheels.
And we are bringing it to you every week. Let's dive right into it, because one of the things you want to find out is where to go, what to do. So this is Saturday afternoon that you're hearing this, and you still have a day and a half of the Hand-Built Motorcycle Show in downtown Los Angeles. The Hand-Built Show, as you know, Ricardo and I are both motorcycle riders, and Ricardo and I both know about the Hand-Built Show that has been going on in Austin, Texas for 21 years, and those guys are finally bringing it out to Los Angeles, and it's going on right now as you hear this, and it'll also happen tomorrow, and the location is at LA Auto Storage, 1219 South Santa Fe. Now, that's right where the 10 freeway and the 5 freeway sort of intersect, that little curve that sort of faces downtown Los Angeles. You can't miss it. From the off-ramp, you'll be able to look down and see the show. It'll be really nice. Three-day ticket. Well, it's no longer 3 days anymore. One-day ticket is $15, and it's well worth it. So many cool bikes, and I don't mind paying $15 because there's so many cool bikes. It's a custom motorcycle show, but it's not really a Harley chopper type show. There are Harleys, of course, but there are also custom BMWs, Ducatis, Royal Enfields, and Indians. And those are just the ones that we know about so far. The show, of course, making its move out from Austin, Texas to LA. Ricardo, did you ever go see it in Austin?
No, I always read about it. And it's just like, I'm so excited and happy because I'll be going later today. And these are artisans, you know, craftsmen of the highest caliber building these outstanding machines that it's really worth seeing. Because we don't know when we're going to have another chance to see this again. They may come back, may not. So we want to make sure that if you're going to make it tonight or this afternoon, tomorrow, if you're a motorcyclist, this is an event that you really want to take all in, and you will enjoy it.
There were a couple of shows like this before the pandemic. It was not called the Hand-Built Motorcycle Show, but it was perhaps some of the same guys, and they had shows in various parts of that downtown, sort of the industrial area just east of the downtown part of Los Angeles. And those were always very interesting shows. I enjoyed those a lot. Pandemic hit, and that was really hard on these guys. But now we're starting to come back with this Hand-Built Motorcycle Show. Today and tomorrow, downtown LA Auto Storage, 1219 South Santa Fe. $15, best $15 you will ever spend, at least this weekend. But there's another event down in The OC, Michelle, what do we have down there? It has two letters and a number, an R, an X, and a 7.
Uh-huh. Is that? Well, that's actually near where the hand-built motorcycle show is going to take place because it's in the Arts District in downtown L.A. This is a brand new event called RX7's Day LA, and that's why they're holding it on 7/7/24.
That is so clever. I applaud them. You can hear me clapping.
Tomorrow, yeah. And now this isn't the first time they've had Sevens Day because it's celebrated all over the world, literally.
Was there one in 1977?
You know,
was there an
RX7?
I don't
think it came out there was no RX7 after that. Yeah, I don't think it came out till after that.
Maybe 2007. Okay, sorry to interrupt. Please, go on.
Sure. Anytime. It's so, okay, here's the deal. It's at 7th and Anderson. The specific address is 611 Anderson Street. It's going to start at 10 a.m. if you want to go spectate. But if you want to be in the show, there's still time to register, and you have to be there by 8 o'clock to queue up and get parked. If you want to get the details on this, you have to go to their Instagram page, which is Sevens Day LA. So it's the number 7, S-D-A-Y-L-A, on Instagram. It's going to go till noon, so it's really not a long event.
That's 2 hours. That's like a flash mob.
Exactly. And so it's put on by the organizers who put on our 7 stock, which is in the fall. And that's a gathering of all rotaries, not just RX-7s. And the Vintage Japanese Motor Union. So this is the first time those two have gotten together to present 7's Day. And I'm going to try to go.
Good. And of course, you'll bring your RX-8, I assume.
Yes, I will. Of course.
But she will be on 8th Street.
I'll be a block east. Yes.
Oh, that's the kind of quality humor you get here on
that's
the car
get.
Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you
Hope
very
much. Hope to see you there.
I drove an RX-8 about a million years ago. I drove it up to the Monterey Car Weekend, which is another thing that's coming up in the future. And I actually had a Porsche 911 GT3 RS that I was going to drive up there. And then the publisher of Autoweek said, hey, do you have anything interesting that I could drive up to Monterey? So he took the GT3, but I got the RX-8 and it was really quite interesting. One thing that I noticed was it was by the time I went up there and got back, it was a quart of oil down from when I started.
I don't know. Yeah.
But that doesn't happen, does it?
Well, I don't drive mine all that much. But having said that, I still check the oil often.
Yes, indeed.
They're wonderful machines to drive. If you like driving, the RX-7s and RX-8 are a delight in chassis. I mean, they feel very light, very nimble, a very accurate steering. I love when you have cars that do not have a lot of power because you can really maximize everything else. And that's one car that if you like driving, if you like shifting gears and putting the car in the in the apex of the corner, this is a car that rewards you with that.
Yeah,
for sure.
And I as I recall, that drive I took was quite nice. That wasn't the only time I did it, but I was glad to have that car. So it was fun. It was good.
I'm glad you guys both have experience with those cars.
We have positive results from that. And I remember they had a couple of rotary engine motorcycles back in the 70s, and it did seem promising because the engine itself is so compact compared to, say, an inline 4 or a V6 or something. It's about the size of, like a coffee can or something, a big coffee can, but still it's not large. Mm-hmm. And, you can stack them up, right? You can do 2, 3, 4 rotors. And
for sure. And we do see rotary motorcycles at the 7 stock in the fall, as well as rotary pickup trucks and all kinds of things. So,
yeah, it's the Wankel engine, Felix Wankel. I don't know when his birthday is. So we'll just say happy birthday, Felix Wankel. It's not today, but, we're just throwing that out there.
We're all just wankers.
If you're in downtown LA tomorrow for this RX-7 event, then just about 10 minutes, 15 minutes drive, you will be at the Peterson where they're having an all-American cruise in.
That's
and
right.
That could be something else that you can also do within, half an hour of each other. You can probably do both events. As always, the Peterson breakfast that turns into these cruise ins bring a lot of cars. And tomorrow they're celebrating Ed Pink, Ed Pink, very famously started building engines in the early 1960s and became an icon of the V8 Chevrolet engines. Lots of Formula 5000s use the Ed Pink machines, and definitely it's part of the not just only California, but the United States tradition of V8 power.
Yeah, he will be there, and he will be interviewed on stage. He's, how old is he? I think he's 90-something. I saw him not too long ago, and he's always, you know, always has a great attitude. He's happy to talk to you, so that should be a good interview. He'll be on stage with, I believe, our good friend, organizer of the Rodeo Concours, Bruce Meyer, will be up there too, maybe doing the interview, and a couple of other luminaries of the auto industry. So that, yes, that's at the Peterson All-American Cruisin'. It's called All-American because this is 4th of July weekend, of course, and so it's All-American cars. I cannot go because actually I looked at everything in the driveway and there's nothing made in America.
Oh, so darn.
I can't go, darn it. But, you know, bring something that you have that's made in America. Put a couple American flags on the radio antenna mast and
yes.
Drive on over there. It goes from 8 to 11 is what I have down here. Peterson Automotive Museum, of course, is at the intersection of Fairfax and Wilshire. The address is technically 6060 Wilshire Boulevard. You enter on Fairfax. Sometimes they open up the entrance on 8th Street. So keep an eye on that as you're coming up Fairfax. If you see that entrance is open, cut over there and save yourself about 30 seconds of time. And their cruisins are always good fun. So, but I would say, because the last time they had a cruisin that we talked about, we said to do it and then it was canceled. So go to peterson.org and just verify that it hasn't been canceled before you head out. But that is a great way to start out your day on Sunday. Go there and then go to the RX-7. Yeah. And then go to Handbuilt.
Yeah. There you go. Got the whole morning.
You got
lined
you
got
your whole
up.
Day.
Yeah.
Your day planned out for you. It'll be lots of fun. One more thing down in Michelle's neck of the woods down there. Cars and coffee. What do we have?
If you're not inclined to get on the road on Sunday morning, just stay in Orange County. Just stay in Irvine and go to the Segerstrom Shelby Event Center. They're having their cars and coffee. And they bring the coffee. They bring the donuts. And everyone else brings the cars. And usually American, I show up in the Miata and whatever. People walk right by and don't care. But that's right.
You do have a Shelby hat.
I do. They have merch there. And the last time I was there, I got myself a Shelby Cars and Coffee hat with a gigantic snake right on the front. And it's in the Miata, and I drive with it all the time now because it's perfect. It's like very snug and cute. So there you go. Bring your muscle cars. Bring your Mustang. Bring your Cobra, whatever.
And I think if you're there at the cruise, go ahead and make the donation. I think it's 10 or 20 bucks and go through the museum. The quality of restorations, this collection is unique in the world. You're never going to see so many original Shelby Mustangs in one location. They all have been restored, what they call rotisserie type restorations. Every nut and bolt is new, which takes a lot of time. Takes a lot of knowledge to do it, but this collection is quite impressive, very unique. So if you've been to the Cars and Coffees or you never went inside, make sure you do.
Yeah, the collection was brought together by Ted Segerstrom. Now, as we know, the Segerstrom family is big landowners down in Orange County. They had a lima bean farm, and by golly, all of a sudden that land just skyrocketed. And what is the name of that? Fashion Island? Is that part of theirs? Yep. No. What's the one right by the 405, the big mall thing? I never go to malls. South Coast Plaza. That is on their land. There's still a little bit of lima bean farm down there. So Ted Segerstrom started collecting these Mustangs, actually, in his teen years when he got a hand-me-down 1966 coupe from his older sister. He liked it, and that's what started him. He told me once when I went down there to do a story, and he said, if I'd have had a Camaro, I might have gone the Chevy route. But he didn't, and fans of Fords are all the better for it. So, yes, indeed, check that out.
One more thing. Yeah, yes. One more thing. At the Segerstrom Center, within a half a block, is Hillbank Motors. And they're open whenever Segerstrom Shelby Event Center has a Cars and Coffee. So you can wander up there too.
Yeah. And that is like its own, it's not a museum. That's where they actually sell all of these. I don't want to say they're not kit cars, but the Mustang Cobra continuation cars and the GT40s. And what else? They have the Corvette Grand Sports. They have some amazing cars. I've been lucky.
The Lotus 7. Yep.
I've been lucky enough to drive pretty much all of the cars that they offer, and they drive exactly as you hope and pray that they will. So check that out too. The address is 1 and also 5 Watney, Whatney, in Irvine, California. And that goes, I have 7:30 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. for the Segerstrom Cars and Coffee, Michelle?
Correct.
Okay, good. All right. Looking for next weekend, we have, we're going to talk a little bit later about Lyons Automobilia Museum, but right now we're just letting you know that Iski's 103rd birthday is going to be next week from, what is that, a week from today, July 13th from 9 to 2 at the Lyons Automobilia Museum in Rancho Dominguez, California. Now, Iski, of course, being Ed Iskandarian, he is, can you believe, 103 years old?
That's just, bless his heart. That's awesome.
Incredible. And he's just as, you know, he's the same. I think the first time I saw him was maybe 30 years ago, and he's the same as he was then. And he appears to be the same looking at, there's a new documentary that's going to come out about him that I have seen. And he appears the same all throughout his life. He's just, he has an upbeat, positive attitude. The words that he keeps saying over again, he says two phrases a lot. He says, "Well, I'll be darned." And he says, "Isn't this fun?" And he's just, he's having a great time in life. So go wish Iski a happy 103rd birthday down there at the Lyons Automobilia Foundation and Museum, Saturday, July 13th. Event hours 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. The website is lyonsautomobilia.org. And then if you want, you can add a slash events. Address 2790 East Del Amo Avenue in Rancho Dominguez, California. It's right there by the 710 freeway. You won't get lost. Have a good time. Tell Iski we said happy birthday to him. I might try and get there if I'm in town on that day. That should be fun. Be good. And then a little farther out in the future, Glendale Cruise Night, Saturday, July 20th. What's that? 3 weeks away from today. No, 2 weeks. Who's good at math here? 20 minus 7. 2 weeks. All right.
2 weeks.
This is why I write about stuff instead of why I'm not an engineer. Can you imagine the cars I'd engineer? They wouldn't make any sense at all. Glendale Cruise Night is right
you down. You would have a job at Tesla.
I don't have a Tesla. But
you just qualified yourself for a job there.
For a job at Tesla, I could work.
Yes.
Designing the next pickup truck.
Let's increase the amperage. How about that?
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. Glendale Cruise Night. Glendale Cruise Night, Saturday, July 20th on Glendale Boulevard from 5:30 to 10:30. It's free. It includes over 350 classic cars and modified imports, live entertainment, fireworks show. If you didn't get enough fireworks 4th of July, you can go there. And they say here, they say, "We look forward to seeing you there." So there's your personal invitation. That's Glendale Boulevard, Glendale Cruise Night. And one more thing before we move on here is, remember the show last year? There was a show called Machinissima.
Yes.
And that was a lot of fun. I went to that. Ricardo, you went as well?
Yeah. We really enjoyed it. Yep.
It was really cool. It was a cool collection of just cool Italian cars. They're not necessarily supercars. They're not necessarily, you know, billion-dollar cars. They're just really cool cars. It's put on by a guy we know named Mike Baum, and he did such a good job with the first one. We are looking forward to it. We just got the word where they have released the location of it. It's going to be at 570 West Avenue 26 in Los Angeles. That is the former Lowry's. What was it? There was a restaurant there. There was a
restaurant.
Yeah. Related with Lowry's. I think I ate there once about a million years ago.
Yeah, I did more than once because
it was good.
Yep. Yeah.
It was delicious. I don't think the restaurant's there anymore, but the facility is, and that's where they're going to have Macanissima 2, they are calling it. Macanissima is a word Mike says that he made up. So look, that's August 3rd. That's a long way off. So you have a lot of time to plan ahead. And as long as we're looking way off, August 9th and 10th, if you're looking for an excuse to have a road trip, the Lake Tahoe Concours is August 9th and 10th. Now, this is an event not for cars. It's for wooden boats that Lake Tahoe is famous for. They have a whole bunch of really cool wooden boats up there. And back in the day, that's what you did. If you were a bazillionaire, or as we learned in The Godfather, he had a house on Lake Tahoe, remember? And if you do, you have a nice wooden boat that you go cruising in. And that's going to be the Lake Tahoe Concours, August 9th and 10th. If you want information, LakeTahoeConcours.com. Start planning ahead for that. Okay, that's all the calendar that we have for you. We're going to move on to the news, and we're going to start, sadly, with some sad news. Rick Lorenzen, who was the founder of the Lions Automobilia Foundation and Museum, has passed away. He was 82 years old. He was a great guy. He never raced himself. I found that kind of interesting. But he was somebody who grew up in Wilmington, California. He bought his first hot rod. It was a Willys coupe for $65. And he hot rodded it. And when they started the Lions drag strip, he was there probably every Saturday hanging out. He just loved it. He met all of his heroes, all the drag racing heroes. It was just, he had such a good time growing up that he made a museum, basically a museum out of his youth. So it has all kinds of really neat stuff there. Rick Lorenzen sadly passed away at age 82. They say that the museum and the foundation will continue on in his name. I have yet to get there. I'm shame to say, you guys, have you guys been there yet? Lions Automobilia?
Yes, but also his dad was very, very involved with the ports. And they were one of the original companies that started doing the drayage business, you know, moving everything that was coming to the ports of Long Beach and LA. And that company still exists today. Very, one of the most successful drayage companies.
It's called Price Transfer, right?
It's the name that's of the right. Company. Price yeah. Transfer.
Yeah, that's good. And it sounds like just a huge museum and foundation. In addition to having they recreated the starting line at Lions Drag Strip. So you go there and it looks like, you know, you don't even have to squint much to believe that you were transported back there. They have a couple of hot rods lined up. I think they're fuel altered, made to look like they're taken off. Yep.
But also there's a lot of nostalgia for the family, because I don't remember if it was a sister or someone that liked a particular ice cream store. So there's a replica of that.
Yeah, Foster's Freeze. Foster's Freeze. There was one of those in Redondo Beach when I was growing up. We would go there and they would dip. You would get the smooth ice cream in the cone, and then they would turn it upside down and dip it in this vat of, I bet the EPA no longer allows that stuff, but it was so good. It was either strawberry or chocolate that you would get. And that was delicious stuff. Yeah. So they recreated the Foster's Freeze. They recreated Lion's Drag Strip. I think they recreated a speed shop. It's all there. It's the speed shop, cool.
And also one of the movie theaters.
Wow.
So it's quite a place.
Yeah. It's good. And farewell to Rick Lorenzen, but his daughter, his family, the board of directors, they will all keep the museum going and keep it going for a long time, we hope. So
that's
where we're going to go to celebrate. It's Ed Iske and Darien. So same place, same guys. But you guys, Ricardo, Michelle, you have done a little bit of research on this being a patriotic weekend on the most American car made. What did we find?
Yeah, a company called Brand Keys that specializes in brands around the world and how they match to each other, and how important having the right branding helps the company, right? The colors of the logo, how people identify. And you can imagine if someone has a negative feeling with a particular brand, it could be bad for business. But because we are in this 4th of July weekend, thought it was interesting that they did a special research and they came up with a white paper about the most patriotic brands in the world, which ones really identify with the United States. I don't want to say America because America is a big continent. But what we call these iconic brands, and no surprise, the number one iconic brand for the United States is Jeep. And it makes absolute sense. But the number two brand is also another vehicle, Ford. Then in third place, we have Levi's jeans, Coca-Cola, of course, Disney, Walmart, Harley-Davidson, definitely American, Apple, Jack Daniels, Amazon, Hershey's chocolates, Wrangler jeans, Dunkin' Donuts, and then it goes on. But definitely these brands around the world are so iconic. And I've seen when you travel around the world, you know, people in Germany, Harley-Davidson is really big. All through Latin America, Jeeps, you know, people want a Jeep for their farms. Levi's jeans, they've been smuggled around the world, you know, so people could have them. Same thing with Apple products. So it's quite interesting that the right branding with the right message and the right things can really help a brand. And I thought it's a quite interesting report.
Now, they were doing this most patriotic car, or patriotic brand, I guess.
Yes.
There was also a separate survey of the most American car.
Yes, of course.
And what did those guys find out? And how did they measure most American?
Well, American made. American made. American
so it's
made,
manufactured built, in the United States.
Built in the United States, yes. And,
okay, so a Camaro built in St. Catharine, Ontario, Canada.
That's not qualified.
Would not make it. All those factories down in Mexico does not qualify. So
that's
this
correct.
Is the most American car. Where it was made and the percentage of American content, is that how they went?
Yeah, that's correct. And the thing is interesting is that the number one company by far is Tesla with the Model Y. And then after that, you will imagine that you will have all these American brands, right? But no. Number two is the Honda Passport, which is built in Lincoln, Alabama. Volkswagen ID4, German company, but builds the ID4 in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Then the Tesla model, which is built in Fremont. The Honda Odyssey, also in Lincoln, Alabama. Honda Ridgeline, same factory. The Toyota Camry in Georgetown, Kentucky. Now, finally, we're to another American brand as Tesla. The Jeep Gladiator that is built at the famous Toledo, Ohio plant. And then in number 10th, another very important brand, Lexus, the Lexus TX that is built in Princeton, Indiana. Those are the cars that are built with the most components of American parts.
So it had to be built in the United States and it had to have the most American parts for it
correct.
To be on this list. Okay.
Correct.
And this
correct.
Is by cars.com if you want to take a look at it. And they do give you on their website their methodology if you want okay. to really delve into it.
And they also, they were looking at where is the transmission coming from?
Right.
You know, where is the engine? Where are the pistons coming from? So very detailed, but it shows you that sometimes when you think of these American brands, let's say, you know, a Ford pickup truck or a Dodge Ram pickup truck, at the end of the day, they might not be so American as you thought they would be.
Yeah, do your homework. You know, you could sit there and brag, oh, I got an American car. Well, take a look at the cars.com list just to make sure.
See, yeah, it's funny that Tesla Model Y is at the top of the list. Tesla just, they seem to win everything. What is going on with the Tesla?
Shareholders are very, very happy and they approve.
They approve of what's going on because they
approve
American.
The $56 billion payment to Elon Musk. So definitely they're very happy.
Worth every nickel. You know,
talking about Elon Musk, the Tesla Model Y is still the number one electric vehicle sold in America. And Tesla Model 3 is the number two. But I have to say that the Tesla Model Y, it's selling around 30,000, 34,000 units. And then you look at the Toyota BZ4X.
30,000, how often? 34,000 a month or a year?
This is just a month. This is monthly numbers.
So that's like 500,000 a year. That's
yes. And then I'm looking at the Ford Mustang Mach-E selling about 5,000 a month. The Toyota about 4,000. The Hyundai Ioniq 5 is 4,000. The Rivian is about 2,000. The Ford Lightning also about 2,000 trucks. So definitely when most of your competitors are averaging 3,000 1,000 units a month and you're selling 35.
You are winning.
You are winning, and that's why you're approving this $56 billion pay package.
Is the Mitsubishi IMEV on that list anywhere? Just wondering.
Good one.
Just no, probably not. Okay. All right.
It just may be, but I think it's just down to a couple of hundreds.
Did you guys see the,
cars running in the world?
Running in the world.
There you go. There's still a few running. Yeah. And one of them is yours. Yay. Did you see the BYD overtook Tesla for the very, very first time? In terms of sales,
that's worldwide. Global, they're not obviously not sold here in the U.S.
Correct.
They're sold
in
China.
Mention that because
So take that, Elon.
Yes, they're coming. He's no longer the king of the world.
Yes,
in the EV market, BYD has taken the crown.
Well, speaking of EVs, if you have an electric vehicle, eventually you're going to have to get new tires for it. And our friends at Tire Rack. Now, again, we're not getting a nickel from any of these people.
Yeah, we are not sponsored.
We are not sponsored. Yeah, of course, if Tire Rack wanted to slip me 10 grand in my pocket, no, I wouldn't take it.
No.
I would send it straight to, that's right. We took that training. Mm-hmm. There's very specific things we can and cannot say. Okay, I did not say that. Anyway, why do I get sidetracked so easily? Tire Rack did a study where they tried to pick the most efficient electric tire to put on your car. Now, I just got new tires for the Nissan Leaf that I have that I bought used. And I got tires that were branded as EV tires. Now, what Tire Rack did was they took 9 different tires and they tested them on the same Tesla Model 3. See, we're back at Tesla Model 3. No matter what, it always comes back to Elon Musk. And they which set of those 9 tires worked the best? They compared 5 EV specific tires, 2 popular grand touring all season tires, and 2 ultra high performance all season tires. And these were from brands Michelin, Continental, Goodyear, Hankook, Yokohama, and Pirelli. And which one was the most efficient on the road?
How do they define efficient?
You can find the methodology. Go to TireRack.com, and they spell out the methodology, and it's very thorough. They have their own test facility. What? Why is everybody laughing? I never know what's going on.
But you were asking about the methodology and the other one. But when we talk about tires, this is tires and shocks are perhaps 2 of the critical components on the automobile that will totally change the perception of how it feels. And tires, unfortunately, most of the people, when they have to replace tires, I would say probably about 50% of people get the wrong tires. I remember one time, and this was at Costco, they had a sale on tires. And I don't remember the details, but let's say there were 4 tires for $100. And you were like, wait a minute, 1 tire is $100. How can you have 4? For the same amount of money, right? And then I'm looking at the tires, and this is Costco, and we are in Southern California, and it's summertime. And then I look at the tires, and these are snow tires. And people were buying it because they were cheap and thinking like, no, you cannot
use these tires. They had to get rid of inventory.
That's right. But sometimes people do not know, and they forget that your 3,000, 4,000, 6,000 pounds of weight of that car are just sitting in a small patch no bigger than the size of your shoes. And that's why it's so important to get the right tire. Manufacturers spend millions of dollars in engineers in testing to match a specific tire to a specific suspension to a specific vehicle. I mean, supercars, they have individual tires, left front, left right. They're not the same. All 4 tires are different. So tires are a critical component for an automobile. So that's why I was asking, what is most efficient for an electric car? Because what we need in an electric car is to minimize, first of all, electric cars. We're talking about cleaning the environment. It needs to be energy efficient. Therefore, we need something that offers very little rolling resistance.
Right.
And that in itself, it will make the tire to be narrower. And when we go narrower, then we give up a little bit of the handling, right? So that's why I was asking, how did they?
Okay, I got it here. They did a six-mile loop on that included expressway, state highway, and country roads. And a real-world circuit that provides various road conditions at both city and highway speeds, including smooth and coarse concrete and new and patched asphalt. And the thing that they measured was, let's see, it was like watt hours per mile or something. Yeah, watt hours per mile that's what they were keeping track of. They did wet and dry testing on Tire Rack's own 1/3 mile test track, incorporating 90 degree street corners, a 5-cone slalom, and simulated expressway ramps. Now, if you're looking at only efficiency, the results, because there are a couple of different, several results from this test, the most efficient tire was a line of tires called the Hankook Ion Evo AS that used only 263 watt hours per mile. So to get this car, the Tesla Model 3, to go 1 mile, it took 263 watts.
Oh, that's a quarter of the horsepower. Great. That's
okay. Very good. The Goodyear Eco-Ready was second, 269 watt-hours per mile. And the Continental Pro Contact RX T1 was 272 miles. Now, they also, like I said, they checked out to see which one would give the best handling results for this Tesla Model 3. And the winner of that was the Michelin Pilot Sport 4S, which is on a lot of sports cars nowadays. Right.
But definitely not a tire for an electric vehicle. It just, because again, that's the compromise.
Some people don't mind losing some range in order to get handling. And those are for those people, get that Michelin.
I was going to say that was going to be my pick only because I have 8 tires in my garage and they're all the same Michelin Pilots.
Yep, very popular brand on the Michelin logo there. So, yeah, consider that. It's always good to go to Tire Rack and just see what they say. Sometimes, if you have really weird cars like a Volkswagen Eurovan or a Mitsubishi Imea, that freaks anybody out. You go into Costco. If you go into Costco tire department and you have a Toyota Camry, yeah, they got tires for you. Honda Accord, they got tires for you. But if you have something really weird and funky, they might not have.
Now, when I went to Electrify Expo, there was a speaker about they were developing a specific tire for EVs only and explained a lot, which I've forgotten because I'm blonde, of what are all the concerns that you need to put into an EV tire. And I don't know where they ended up with it, if it's come out or if it was part of that test or not.
Well,
I think it was Bridgestone.
Was that on the press tour? Because it started out with Hankook and then it went to Yokohama. And those are the only two presentations. Mm. Falcon was also there, but they didn't really have an EV tire specifically.
Mm. And I think also, unfortunately, when we talk about, again, what is the right tire for an electric vehicle? And this is my personal view for what I've seen. I have an electric vehicle this week, so I've been charging in different places, and I see the automobiles. And most of them are luxury automobiles, and people are not really buying it for what they were made for. You know, again, if we wanted to clean the environment, we want to be efficient. We're not doing it. Therefore, they want comfort. And then forget the tire that will give you the less resistance. Let's get a wider tire that gives you more comfort. And that's the trade that I've seen a lot of cars. A lot of these electric cars do not have the right tire for the purpose of the vehicle, but that is irrelevant. The consumer wants to feel better and that the car rides better and so forth.
If you have a gasoline powered car, you might be wondering, planning on using it this summer to drive somewhere. And according to AAA, the price of gas, now this is across the country, this is not here in Southern California, but across the country, the average price as of a few weeks ago was $3.44 a gallon. Boy, what would you pay to have that here in Southern California?
That's interesting. And also the Auto Club, when it was doing its projections for driving for this week, for the 4th of July, that there were going to be record numbers of people traveling 50 miles or more because the prices were going down. Again, not accounting for California. It's like, It's sort of like the German judge and the Russian judge and the ice skating. Just take the California out.
Just take California. California is a little bit whack.
Take them out. Yeah.
In that regard. Yeah. I just did a story at autoweek.com on that very thing. The number of people planning to travel 50 miles or more over the course of this, they said the whole week, is 71 million.
Wow. And
85% of those are going to be in cars, trucks, or SUVs on public highways, getting to wherever they're going. So it is crowded out there, people. And they said one other stat that I remember from that was the worst time to be out driving is between 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. That's across the country. If you go to the story at autoweek.com, you can see your specific area where you might be intending to go, Seattle, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, Florida, Orlando, whatever. And it'll give you an idea about what the worst time to be out on the road is on the worst day and the worst time of that day. That's from AAA. So thank you, AAA, for that.
Going back to the price of fuel, we must remember that cost of fuel in the United States, it's still very, very low. Most of the world is paying between $9 to $13 a gallon.
Yeah, and in the South, in the Southern United States, it's $3 a gallon, they said. So yep. Crazy, man. Yep. Yeah, as much as we would like to complain, and I love complaining, we don't have it as bad as the rest of the world.
That's right.
Because we are an oil-producing country. I think we export oil. Don't we export more oil than anybody else? Aren't we sort of...
Not lately. Not lately, okay. But we do have that capacity, and we are trying to replenish our reserves for the upcoming events that it will be happening in. Let me check my crystal ball. Yes.
Okay.
In the next 6 to 8 months.
6 to 8 months. Okay. And in the next 6 to 8 months, if you want a comfortable crossover utility vehicle to drive around in, Ricardo has just gotten out of one. Ricardo, what was that thing?
A vehicle that where you don't really care what you pay for the fuel. When you talk about premium vehicles, okay, then you're going to have to pay to get the premium feeling and the premium power. But a company that I think it's been building these cars that are very reliable, very dependable, and people just buy them, it's Acura. Acura being sort of brother, sister, cousin of Honda.
The luxury arm of Honda, yeah.
There you go. They have a new, let's call it a facelift to the MDX. But now the 2025 MDX Type S is available. Type S meaning sport. And for Acura, that is being known for its involvement in motorsport. The new MDX, the engine is the V6 twin cam, very similar to what we find in an NSX. It's a 3-liter motor with a turbocharger that puts out 350 horsepower. Now, we're talking about a mid-size SUV. It's a 3-row seat, you know, platform where you think, wait a minute, hey, I have a sports car engine on a SUV, on a family SUV. So, hey, if you want to get the feeling, if you want the power, Acura is making these possible for you. I had a great time with the vehicle. I really enjoy. I like the looks of the car. It's one of those cars that is very pleasant in your eyes. Most of the people will like this vehicle. But the ride is what makes the difference, because it is the premium ride for this Type S, which is a sports version. It comes with a 10-speed transmission, but most importantly, they have retuned the whole suspension. It still maintains the double A independent arms in the front package that they call dynamic suspension that in milliseconds can change how the shocks react. When you got power, you need to stop. So this Type S, it's coming with a Brembo brake system with front calipers that have 4 pots, and they really very edgy. I felt them like, wow, they really grab a lot. So they're made to go high speed. I think this is a great vehicle for the Autobahn. We don't have one, so we need to take it easy. But definitely it's a car that can go going pretty fast. 10-speed transmission, all-wheel drive. Something that it's nice in this new version is that they have gone away from the center console and the system that you had to use on your info entertainment system. Now we have a touchscreen screen that is 12.3 inches wide. Very easy to use. We
really?
Have a...
Because so often those things just drive people crazy. I know they drive me crazy. The HMI, the human machine interface, is good, you're saying.
Yes. No, good. But it's gone. That is gone. And that's a big plus. So And it has a push button transmission, which is nice to see right in the center.
It takes a little getting used to, doesn't it? Because the first time you pull out into the street and you're trying to put it in reverse, you have to think and somebody T-bones you.
You get used to it. Okay. The center console is pretty wide and it has a huge wireless charging space for your phone. So it doesn't really matter the size of your phone. It will fit. And because that's something that I notice sometimes, the phones are getting bigger and sometimes these wireless chargers, they're not wide enough to be able to get them there. Something that I enjoy on the interior is the new seats that, because we're talking about premium, they have nice leather, but the way the stitching is done, somewhere I hear that they call it curvilinear trim seats, but they're very nice to look, especially on the light color. Interior sort of a cream with blue. Both front seats have the massage option. So you can get in the highway, you can get in the freeway and be sort of de-stressed where you're listening to music. And when you talk about listening to music, this Acura Type S has just 31 speakers.
What?
31?
31 speakers, yes.
Sounds like I cannot believe that.
It's the new system from Bang Olufsen, a 1,200-watt system that they have somehow managed to put 31 speakers inside this car. And, of course, you can feel the waves coming from every direction. It's pretty, pretty nice. So the MDX, we have the base model. We have the A-Spec, which is sort of a premium. And now we have the S version. That is the sports version.
And that's what you were on. You were in the S, right?
Yeah. I try the S, which is the sports version. It comes with 21-inch wheels, special wheels that are black chrome with the new grille. It has sort of a little bit of an aggressiveness to it, but very, very comfortable. I found it on the highway that because they're using sports tires where you need grip, therefore they're a little bit harder, I could hear the highway noise and the freeway noise coming inside. But I will blame that on the tire combination that I'm sure on the A-Spec that they use a different tire wheel combination will be softer and quieter. But you wanted power, you got power. It is a very nice package. But it's not cheap. It's $74,600 for the Type Spec. That's a big difference from when you talk about $50,000.
Yeah, the base model is $50,150 here. That's for front wheel drive only for the MDX. So
and also the engine is a
package.
Right, and it also the engine is a little bigger, but it doesn't have the turbo. So it's a 3.5 V6 motor that generates 290 horsepower. It's still plenty of power. Now the
Go ahead.
I would say I like the vehicle. I just found that the third row seating, it's a little bit too tight, and it takes space from the trunk, and I feel like I wish it didn't have it personally. Because
so it doesn't fold flat or anything, the third row.
It folds flat, but they're bucket seats, so it's not like one. You have the space, but you will feel like I don't really want to damage this inside. But that was the only thing that if I could find any things to object, you know, it would be that third row seating. There was not enough space for an adult's legs for sure. That would be a little bit hard to get in and out, and also. You wouldn't have enough room, but for kids we'll be okay. But overall, it's a nice car. I have to say it's a very competitive segment. Everybody makes a nice car. So I would say this is competitive. It's worth giving it a try to go to the dealership and for a test drive. Yes, Mark.
Okay. And in the same category, maybe a little bit up from that, I just drove the Ferrari.
Is it premium?
Yeah. It's premium. Super premium. Space premium. This is the Ferrari Puro Sangue I just drove. It's a V12 powered, naturally aspirated, non-turbo, non-hybrid, just 12 cylinders out there the way Enzo intended them to be. And I got to drive this for about 4 days in the Northeast. We started in Brooklyn, went into New York, and then we just went Airbnbs all the way up to Montreal, Canada. In this car, I kind of wished I had somebody other than just my dopey driving partners who show up in all these things. You know, it was more of a romantic drive type situation, and there was no romance involved. So I was a little disappointed in that, but I was not disappointed in the Ferrari Puro Sangue. It's for years and years and years, Ferrari was saying, we are not going to build an SUV. We will never build an SUV. And they would actually act insulted if you even brought up the SUV thing.
Yes. I remember reading Sergio Marchionne saying, it will never happen. I remember that.
Yeah. So, and now here it is, surprisingly. And they are saying they're only going to limit it to 20% of their sales. But I think that that will go out the window too, as soon as they realize, hey, we're making like a zillion dollars. We're making like $100,000 on each car. Now, that's just my speculation. I don't know how much they're making on each car, but you know,
it does. It's very difficult to make a car look different today. And this car has a lot of eye appeal. It is different looking.
It stands apart. It's well integrated. And in fact, it looks a little closer. Well, I'm not saying looks wise, but size wise, proportion wise, it looks a little closer to the GTC4 Lusso. Remember that? That was a four-seater that Ferrari made. It was also V12 powered, with the V12 in the front and the seats behind that. But it's sort of a higher, I'd say higher roof, more practical and more stylishly appealing version of that car. Now, they'll tell you that there's really nothing carried over from any of those other cars, and very little, if anything, shared with other cars like that, that this is a lot of it is all new. Now, of course, the V12, you know, you change a couple things around and call it all new, but why change what is a great thing? Those V12s from Ferrari are going all the way back to the Colombo V12s of the early 60s and 50s. Those were amazing V12s. Already, and it's just, it's like Ferrari has to have a V12 available. And this is what you get.
Now, how are the back seats?
This one, I want to know. Is, to be specific, it's a 6.5 liter, 65 degree dry sump V12. And of course, there have been 6.5 liter V12s, and before that, 6.3 liter V12s. They just bored it out to make the 6.5. This is similar. The cylinder heads are derived from the 812 Competizione. Am I saying that right? Does that sound? Anybody speak Italian? Competizione. That was, of course, the two seater, V12 powered two seater, and that's a great place to, you know, take your cylinder heads from. It has 48 valves, 5,000 PSI direct fuel injection. It makes 715 horsepower at 7,750 RPM, 528 pound-feet of torque at 6,250, and 80% of that torque is available from 2,100 on. It's mated to an 8-speed dual-clutch transmission. Now, what other SUV has a dual-clutch transmission? I don't know, man. But this one is fast shifting. It works just fine. We got to drive it. Like I say, we got to take it on some fast curvy roads, because there's a lot of nice curvy roads up there in that part of the world. And I would say that it did a good job on those. It was not, obviously it's not the same as the 812, which was the previous two-seat version of a front engine V12 powered Ferrari. So it doesn't feel quite the same as that, but you know, it is competent when you put it in the corners. And I can say, after having been there for 4 days in this car, that you almost forget that you're in a Ferrari when you've been driving it this long, that it just becomes this very comfortable thing that you're in and you're enjoying it. What do you think, Ricardo?
No, my question, does it feel agile and lightweight?
No.
Or is it well-planted?
It feels well-planted, I would say. Now, you can get cars. I mean, there really is no competition for this car, because it's $500,000, really. I mean, I think the starting price is $423,000. The one that I had, I drove like, I think, three different cars over the course of 4 days. And I remember that one of the prices was $526,000. But that, of course, includes, you know, contrasting cross-stitch leather and contrasting carbon fiber with little red trim impregnated in the carbon fiber. It's just there's a lot of options, and I don't think that they're going to be selling a quote-unquote base model of this. So expect to pay at least $500,000 for this, when you go down to your Ferrari dealer. And you probably have to know the Ferrari dealer and have purchased a lot of Ferraris beforehand from them to be allowed to purchase one of these. What do you think, Ricardo?
Is this a four-seater or a five-seater vehicle?
It is four. That's a good question. The back seat is not a bench seat. The back seat are, you know, I don't know if you could call them bucket seats, but they are right. Bucket seats, essentially. So they are very comfortable. I sat back there and was chauffeured around for a little bit. There's headroom, there's shoulder room. You don't feel at all cramped in the back seat of this. Now, there is not an awful lot of luggage room behind those seats, but you can fold them down to make more room. Michelle, what do you think?
Well, this is Ferrari's first four-door. So they've had back seats before, but not the door to get into the back seat before.
Yeah, the rear doors are interesting. They are rear-hinged, so-called suicide doors, and they operate completely independently of the front doors. Now, I cannot say, and I should have checked this out, I don't think you can open them when you're going down the freeway. You needed air brakes.
Oh,
if you needed air brakes, you tell your rear seat passengers, open the doors, we got to slow down. No, I did not try that out. I am assuming
that. So you cannot use that if you're turning left, you open your left door to have more of a swing.
These are great ideas, and I wish I had known these. I could have brought this up with the Ferrari engineering staff.
And ask them how the dynamics would work.
How would the dynamics work? How would it change around there?
And they'd be like,
so yeah.
You'd get sworn at. You would totally get sworn at.
Was that inappropriate in Italian that we just heard?
Yes.
Very.
Yeah, so we're going to get sued. All right. Good thing we have a staff attorney here. But how much time do we have left? My clock is...
we have about a minute and a half.
Minute and a half? Oh, we got time to burn. Well, so I'm going to keep talking about the Puro Sangue. Because
you enjoy driving the vehicle, and then you get used to it, and then you forgot there was a Ferrari. At any time, you felt so comfortable that you forgot there was a Ferrari.
Yeah, you just, after 4 days, I guess it's probably like living with a movie star, supermodel, or something. You know, after a while, you just hey, that's great. Hand me the toast. I'm ready to eat breakfast. You know, I don't know. It would be some kind of normalcy. It settles upon you and you're quite happy with this car. I was never irritated by it. I will say you were talking about how good the Acura MDX was as far as its HMI. The HMI on this thing, the way that you work with the the radio and all those other things is done through these touch sensitive buttons, not buttons. They're like areas of the spokes of the steering wheel. And those need some work because it's the same as on the 296. So you have to touch it just right and then touch it just right again. And yeah. And we're almost out of time, Michelle.
Well, yeah, but I wanted to add one more thing.
Yes.
You know what Puro Sangue means, right?
Thoroughbred, pure
That's
blood.
That's right. Thoroughbred.
Yeah, thoroughbred. Thoroughbred. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very important. So they're trying to say, this is a continuation of our excellent, tradition of putting great cars out there. It's just, okay, so it's an SUV with four doors and four people can sit in it. Hey, we're still thoroughbreds.
They did a good job. If you have $500,000 and you need an SUV, buy the Ferrari. That's the car show telling you. And now we're just about out of time. We have to thank Wendell and Master Control. Wendell, thank you. Stick around for Bill Gardner with Rhapsody in Black. Wonderful music for 2 hours that you didn't know you loved. And stick around next week. We'll see you the same time, same channel on The Car Show.
I'm John Santana. Join me next time for Cinema Score, when John Malcheri will conduct the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra and many of the sweetest love themes from all of film music, like Franz Waxman's Oscar-winning music for Peyton Place. That and much more on Cinema Score. Sunday evening at 5 here on KPFK 90.7.
If you don't already know about it, it's really time to discover KPFK. KPFK is community radio from Southern California, powered by people like yourself for over 62 years. It's part of the completely unique Pacifica Network, and our listener sponsors are passionate. We've routinely heard them say things like,
"It is the best source of news that I know of."
The thing that distinguishes Pacifica from the rest of the media landscape is our funding model, listener sponsorship. It allows us to speak to what really matters in our listeners' lives. So why not become a part of this impassioned